Okay, so what I'm going to be talking about this afternoon is estimating the effects of wildfire management, the effect that it has on fire behavior using a propensity score matching approach. I should maybe first apologize that I'm an economist. And you know, you might wonder, well, what is economists doing looking at wildfires? I get that a lot. You work for the Forest Service. You're probably some kind of ranger or something. No, I'm an economist. What are you doing? Well, I'm studying wildfire. Well, what does wildfire and economics have to do with one another? And I try to explain it, that I'm not just going out and looking at damages and stuff. What is economics? I mean, economics basically is the study of the allocation of scarce resources in society. So what does that, you know, exclude? Probably nothing. I mean, everything we have in this earth is finite to some degree. But essentially, I think economics gets at trade-offs. We have to make trade-offs in society. And this is the case of wildfire. We start thinking about wildfire. Well, we spend a lot of money, society spends a lot of money, fighting fires and preventing fires, and then there's damages from fires. So there's a whole set of trade-offs. We're making trade-offs that we invest now in certain resources to minimize fire later. We've made a trade-off. We can also make trade-offs between the resources we're using to mitigate fires. Are we going to spend a lot of money on wildfire suppression? Conversely, maybe we spend more money in fuel management programs, thinning programs, and so forth. So a number of years ago, the economics unit that I work for, we started looking at wildfires and trying to understand, well, what could we do to maybe add a little light or to understand the wildfire problem a little bit more? And can we come to some conclusions of trying to determine how much wildfire should be allowed? And that sounds kind of strange, the idea that wildfire might be allowed, but wildfire can be beneficial in some sense. And it is probably not efficient to go ahead and fight every wildfire completely. I mean, we hear about these let use fires, and I know a lot of states have programs where they have plans in place that if a fire occurs in a certain place at a certain time, they're just going to let it burn because it's not worth fighting and there's no real benefit of fighting it. So the economic theory kind of behind all this that we're using is, and there's a poster out there that you know shows a nice little total cost curve, the idea of cost plus loss. We want to minimize cost plus loss. The cost of fighting the fires plus the loss or the net value change, right, because wildfires aren't always bad. We want to minimize that. And then conversely, we can take the dual of that program and we can turn into a maximization problem where what we want to maximize is damages averted from wildfire, given some input cost to suppression and pre-suppression. Well, that sounds good. And at first, I think we were, you know, as it comes, thinking, well, this is simple. We can estimate cost functions. We do it all the time. We can take first-order conditions and arrive at optimal levels of suppression and pre-suppression, and then that, you know, transfers, we can say how much is the optimal level of wildfire that society wants. But the problem is, when we started looking at it, is no one's really modeled the effectiveness of a lot of these programs. How effective is suppression? How effective is pre-suppression? We don't know. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of empirical research. There's some experimental research where they're working on small plots, but we're more interested in these broad scales. We're looking at states, we're looking at counties, we're looking at areas that are bigger than just little forested plots. And there's a whole intricacy of things going on in these broad scales. There's people going in and out, causing ignitions, detecting fires. So what we've ended up doing in the past couple of years is really trying to model the production of wildfire as a function of several things, but including management. And from that, we're trying to understand how effective is management on wildfire. And if we can understand that, then we can start running our cost models and then determining, well, what's the optimal level. Well, what I want to talk about this afternoon, this is kind of just like a long-winded introduction of why I'm talking about program evaluation. And the reason I'm doing so is we've looked at estimating the effects of programs using OLS models. But I kind of took a step back and started looking at some other research that was in economics and how people have dealt with trying to quantify the effects of programs. And there is a pretty rich literature, and it's really grown in the past decade or two. where the literature is trying to explore the ability of non-experimental methods to quantify the effectiveness of social programs. It's been applied to several fields in economics and statistics, including labor, medicine, education, and now we're going to try to apply it to wildfire management. So what are we interested in? What am I talking about, a program? Well, we're interested in measuring the effectiveness wildfire management has on fire behavior. In this talk, I'm just going to be talking about size and intensity, but this methodology could be used for any attribute of fire behavior that you're interested in. And the actual technique that I'll be using is propensity score matching, and it has some advantages over more traditional parametric approaches and its ability to deal with kind of the simultaneity issue between suppression and wildfire, and I'll kind of talk about this more. So program evaluation, generically it's just you're interested in estimating the causal effect a group's participation in a program, and this is called a treatment, has on some variable of interest, and I'll call this the outcome. Well, traditionally in these early labor studies, they've been looking at, well, how does a training program affect a participant's wage after they entered the program? In medical studies, they look at, well, how does a drug therapy increase or decrease someone's health? And in the wildfire analysis, we're interested in measuring the effectiveness wildfire management has on wildfire behavior. And for this analysis, I'm just going to be talking about prescribed fire. Well, if we had a nice laboratory where we could set up a mini little civilization and start dropping fires in there and watching what happened, we might be able to do an experimentally controlled study. And, you know, unfortunately, that's not the case. And so what we're trying to do is create something that's similar to an experimentally controlled study using observational data. And what's important about, you know, experimentally controlled study is that we can take a treated group and an untreated group, and if we randomly select them, we can say that the treated group and the untreated group are pretty much the same group, except one of them we're going to subject to a treatment. And any outcome that we observe that changes for that treatment group is due to the treatment, not some other underlying covariate. As I mentioned, what we're trying to do now is use this in observational studies, and it's because experimentally controlled studies are infeasible or expensive, or maybe they're just unethical in certain situations. So in an observational study, we can compare the outcome from a treated group, right? So we observe all wildfires that have had some sort of treatment, and we could compare them with wildfires that didn't have treatment. But this might not be a good comparison, because the treatment decision in this case, it was not random. And if it's not random, that implies that the treatment that we're observing may be due to both treatment and some underlying factor. In the labor case, they talk about people who self-select themselves into an educational training program, and they go out and they earn high wages. So if you were to look at people that went through this treatment program, you say, well, they have high wages compared to people that did go through the treatment program and their wages are lower. Say, this treatment program's fantastic. Well, it may be that people that go into a treatment program who decided to have higher level motivation, have greater education, so they would have earned higher wages anyways. So we're not truly measuring the treatment effect. So just kind of getting to go over it, in the wildfire case, wildfire may not be independent of treatment selection, and this occurs because the management decision to mitigate wildfires is simultaneously determined with the wildfire itself. And what do I mean? Well, you can think of fire suppression. There's a fire, they get a call, they have to go respond to the fire. Obviously, we believe that fire suppression is going to mitigate wildfire size. I mean, that's what we hope. That's what we pay them to do. But the size of the wildfire influences the size of the response. The more hazardous the conditions, the closer they are to risky populations, the bigger the response will be. So, you know, if you think about the OLS sense, we now have a dependent variable and independent variable endogenously related. And pre-suppression, fuel treatments. Fuel treatments aren't just done all over the land. They're done in risky areas. And you might guess that in areas with high wildfire risks, they're going to have lots of wildfire. And we can compare areas that have a lot of prescribed burning with areas that don't have very much prescribed burning. And we might find in areas that have a lot of prescribed burning, they have a lot of wildfire. And does that mean prescribed burning is ineffective? No, it's because prescribed burning is done in areas with high wildfire. So I've talked about in the OLS framework, we could estimate the treatment effect if we have some data, which we do, where we regress wildfire behavior, whether that's wildfire size or intensity or some measure, on a set of covariates that we think influence the outcome, plus just a dummy variable for treatment status. Right? And so if we did this in the OLF sense, alpha here is the treatment effect. The problem is if treatment effect and or the treatment selection and wildfire are endogenous to one another, the errors, expectation of the errors won't be zero. And so we have a biased model. So where does program evaluation fit in? It's pretty simple, and I'm not going to really get into the math of it because I think it's really intuitive, and it's really this. It's that if we could subtract from wildfire behavior given treatment the amount of wildfire behavior given no treatment for the same observation, that would be our treatment effect. Okay, well, that seems pretty simple. The problem is we have missing information. For any individual fire we go out and observe, we either see that that fire had some sort of treatment before it, or it hadn't, but we don't know it at the same time. However, this is what I just said. We never observed that the wildfire behavior that would have occurred if the treated wildfire I had not been treated. We never observed this. Could we construct a counterfactual that would lead to an unbiased estimate? Perhaps. And we could substitute fires. We could go out and say, well, there are fires that there's no prescribed burning done. And we could compare those with ones that have had prescribed burning and say, well, let's take the means of each and difference the means, and we say, well, that's the average treatment effect. Well, again, this only holds if there's no endogeneity between the treatment decision and wildfire, which I don't think you can make in this situation. So what we've used is propensity score matching. And this has just really one kind of assumption or proposition from everything that follows. And it says, if we can observe a set of covariates Z that explain the treatment decision, so that accounting for these covariates, we would expect the treatment group and the non-treatment group to have the same outcome if neither were subjected to treatment. And if we can model the probability of treatment as a function of the covariates, we can estimate the propensity score. So this is saying we can go up, we have observations that are treated, some that aren't, and we believe that there's a set of covariates that influence that selection. Okay. If we can estimate the model, what's traditionally done is someone estimates a logit or a probit model, and then we estimate the estimated probabilities for each observation. They call it the propensity score. It's the probability you're going to be treated. And then we go ahead and we match observations based on their likeness to the propensity score, and it creates a control group for the treated group. Again, just reiterating, propensity score matching matches treated and non-treated observations based on the propensity score. The propensity score is a function of the covariates which influence the selection decision. And matched pairs have the same propensity score, thus the probability of treatment selection is the same between treated and untreated groups. This is what occurs in experimental studies. Thus any difference in outcome between matched pairs are due to the treatment. It's a non-parametric matching technique, and it eliminates the curse of dimensionality. We could match on all the sets of covariates Z, but if there's a high number of covariates, matching can become difficult. What's the assumption that you need? Well, you have to assume that there is some set of covariates Z that we can go and observe them. And if that's true, propensity score matching will achieve an unbiased estimate of the treatment effect. If there are some unobserved variables that influence the treatment decision that we can't measure, and we can't put into their model, there's no reason to believe that this is any better than any other model. So now I'll give an empirical example based on a lot of the same data that Marcia just explained. So here we're going to examine the average treatment effect hazard mitigating prescribed fire has on fire size and intensity. Florida has quite a bit of prescribed burning every year. I think they do about 2 million acres of prescribed burning. Half of that is for agricultural reasons. They have big sugar cane industry down there. The other 1 million is done for silvicultural reasons. Half of that, about 500,000 acres, is done to reduce wildfire risk, which sounds kind of funny since there's only about 220,000 acres of wildfire each year in Florida. So they're creating a lot more fire than there's naturally. But the question is, you know, are they getting a benefit from doing all this wildfire? Would there, or prescribed burning, would there be a lot more wildfire if they didn't? So we're gonna, so I analyzed about 7,400 wildfires in the St. John's region, and I'm calling treatment as if you had any prescribed burning within the previous 3 years. Why 3 years? Well, they found in Florida that prescribed burning really only has a protective effect for maybe 2, maybe 3 years, although they seem to say it's about 2. Things grow really quick in Florida. I've seen pictures of areas that have had these really catastrophic fires move in, and 6 months later, just vegetation above head high. So out of all my 7,400 observations, about 938 of them were treated. So if we just go ahead and compare the sample mean between the treated and untreated group before we do anything, we see that the treated group has 56 acres of wildfire, and the untreated group has 70 acres of fire. So that's good. So that shows, well, okay, maybe prescribed burning has some protective effect. If we look at an intensity measure I'm using is a function of flame height. And I think it's measured as kilowatt acres. I'm not certain. Well, you can see the intensity measure is higher in treated areas. And it might be believable that there's more wildfire size in areas that have prescribed burning, because prescribed burning reduces kind of ground fuels. So while you might have bigger fires, they're less intense fires. It's maybe troubling to see, at least just comparing these means, that there's higher intense fires in areas that are doing prescribed burning. In the OLS model that Marcia was showing, it shows that maybe that treatment reduces wildfire size by 3/10 of an acre. We can't really make a direct comparison with the OLS model, and what I'm going to be showing, because what she was showing is prescribed burning earlier in the year, where I'm looking at prescribed burning up to 3 years prior. Yeah, right. Okay, so what's the average treatment effect algorithm? It's pretty simple. You estimate the propensity score, then you pair observations based on the score and some matching criteria, and then you average the pair outcome difference to estimate the average treatment effect. Okay, the propensity score estimator. We model the probability of treatment for each wildfire as a function of two big categories: wildfire risk in the area, and then regulations that concern prescribed burning. So it makes sense. They're going to do prescribed burning in areas where there's high wildfire risk, and then they have to follow a set of protocol. They can only do prescribed burning is when the weather is such that the chance of escape is low. So estimated the model, legit model, and then I graphed here the distributions of the propensity score. And yeah, they're both skewed to the left, which isn't really surprising, because I used a Logit model with a heck of a lot of zeros. I think there's 6,300 zeros and, you know, 900 ones. So it's gonna predict lower probabilities of treatment. But it's not really a concern, because we don't care if the Logit model can predict well. What we really want is when it pairs observations together, that the distribution of covariates each of them have are about the same. What you see here, though, is that the treated group and the untreated group have slightly different distributions of the propensity score. So that means we just went ahead and took the average wildfire size for the treated group, the average wildfire size for the untreated group, and then differences, and said, well, that's the average treatment effect. It probably wouldn't be right, because the covariates that go into influencing the size of the wildfires aren't balanced between the two groups. So after estimating the propensity score, I went ahead and matched observations based on the criteria. The criteria I used here was just nearest neighbor matching. So for every treated observation, let's go find an untreated observation that has the same propensity score. Once I've identified it, that goes into the control group. There's several different matching techniques. Some are really sophisticated. This one's pretty easy to compute, and that's what I did. That's just kind of a first attempt. So now if we look at the distribution of propensity scores for the treated group, this is the same treated group as I showed before, with the match controls. Now, this is 938 of the untreated. You can see the distributions are almost identical. So now the covariates that influence wildfire size should be balanced. Or I should say the covariates that influence selection is the treatment should be balanced. So what are the results? Well, okay, so then I estimated the average treatment effect and then found that prescribed fire reduces wildfire size on average by 127 acres and reduces intensity by 169 kilowatt acre meters per fire, which I don't know what that means, so I back calculated what that means in flame length, and it's about 8/10 of a meter per fire. Well, what's the impact? On average, in a 3-year period, any fire that was treated had about 2 prescribed burns that occurred within the previous 3 years, and about 137 acres were treated. In the federal, at least according to people that do prescribed burning in the federal forest in Florida, they said it costs about $25 an acre to do prescribed burning. That might be true in the federal portions, but in more sensitive areas around homes and sensitive populations, it's probably more expensive. But let's just assume it's $25 an acre. Catastrophic wildfire, well, there's no real good estimate and a comprehensive damage assessment, but we did some work in 98 and found that conservatively, wildfires cost about $1,200 an acre. Assuming these numbers are plausible and reasonable, what does the results show? It shows that the average cost savings from prescribed fire is about $150,000 a fire, and it's only when prescribed burning costs more than $1,100 an acre does it fail to be cost effective. So conclusions are that we find prescribed fire reduces wildfire size and intensity, and it sounds like, well, okay, it should, but in previous empirical analysis we found very weak results. And it appears to be almost a one-for-one trade-off between hazard mitigating prescribed fire and wildfire. And when I talked to my wife about this, she said, well, who cares then? You're having an acre of fire of one kind or an acre of fire of another kind. But, you know, it does make a big difference because prescribed burning is done at a time when conditions are going to limit probability of risk or risk of escape. And it's done under conditions which are more conducive to having fire than when there's wildfires. They can rage out of control and get really big and be very damaging. And then based on the model, we found prescribed fire has mitigated about 120,000 acres of wildfire between 96 and 2001 in St. John's. And that's all I have for conclusions. All I kind of want to say at the end is this is still kind of preliminary modeling. The idea isn't just to stop here or that this is the model and this is right. We're looking at averages. If we were to look at all the treatment effects for each observation, you know, it follows a skewed distribution too, because, you know, wildfires seem to follow a skewed distribution. So we're looking at other measures. So what's a better measure rather than just average treatment effect? And so once we get through this modeling, get back at my original question is, you know, now can we start to understand how management affects wildfire size? And when we can start to understand that, then we can start understanding, well, what are the right trade-offs to make for society? Should they be doing more? Should they be doing less of wildfire management, whether it's prescribed burning or suppression? That's it. Yeah, right, because this is really kind of naive, right? Because I'm saying you had any kind of treatment or you had none. And that might not be the best because prescribed burning, they don't do just prescribed burning and none. They do various amounts of it. And right now, the way people are doing propensity score matching with a continuous variable is essentially, it's still this fairly discrete, but they're breaking up into categories. You might have low levels. You might run a model where you have low levels of prescriber burning, high levels of prescriber burning, and none, and do the model that way. Oh, yeah, sure. Well, it's the protection from an acre of prescribed burning is giving you about an acre of protection. It might be, and prescribed burning doesn't cost very much, so it might be you should do a lot more than they're doing. Exactly. So it gets the problem is if we just put a dummy variable in there and run an OLS model, that there's potential for endogeneity, and the reason that we believe that is say it takes suppression. It's the idea that fire crews respond to wildfires and wildfires respond to fire crews, right? It they're not independent things, and that's kind of the short answer. There's other ways of course getting around endogeneity. You could do an instrumental variables model. Of course, with that, you have to have a set of instruments that are correlated with the right-hand side variable that you're interested in that aren't correlated with the error. And, that often gets into, well, do you have a good set of instruments that you're happy with? Then the other assumption that you make, and maybe it's not a bad one, but maybe with wildfires it is that you're assuming in the OLS model that you have a linear and parameters functional form. Question? Yeah, there's a lot of ways of stratifying the model to take into account these nuances. In this is, admittedly a very basic application, and just to kind of say, can we do it? Are we getting results that are kind of plausible? But you're right. I would think that, in Florida, they really find on their experimental plots that prescribed fire has no effect over 2 to 3 years, and it depends on the stand that they're talking about. But it's possible to take the model and stratify it in a way that you're looking at prescribed fire that happened a year ago, 2 years ago, and 3 years ago as separate. And,